Your experiences in the causal dimensions will give you the knowledge of time, space, dimensionality and what lies beyond all of these things. Remember, Master Fuap said in summation, that what I am doing today is simply providing you with a verbal blueprint of how the universe works. At best it is a mere sketch of reality. Since what we are discussing is almost impossible to explain in words, at first my explanations may sound overly theoretical to you. It is like listening to a university professor discuss quantum mechanics. At first it can be confusing, and you may not see what all the theory you are learning has to do with actual physical applications. But be aware that a blueprint of a building is only a sketch on paper, it is not the building itself. Yet a blueprint provides a necessary template for construction. And, of course, when the actual building is finished, we throw the blueprint away. So in practical terms, Master Fuap continued, if you wish to perform snowboarding perfectly, then you must turn it into perfect yoga. This is what I call mindfulness. It is the direct application of tantric Buddhist teachings to a physical event, a way of doing or accomplishing something, or a way of thinking and viewing something. Tantric yoga is not simply sitting and being absorbed in meditation, Master Fuap said with sudden emphasis. While formal meditation is certainly a critical part of tantric Buddhism, tantric yoga is also a process of turning all of the activities and experiences of your daily life into meditation. Master Fuap, please correct me if I am wrong. But what you are saying is that you are going to teach me about enlightenment by showing me how to snowboard perfectly. Is that right?
Yes, he quickly replied, it is. But to snowboard perfectly, you also must know how to meditate well. So is there an interrelationship between meditation and physical events? Or is meditation just sitting there and spacing out on enlightened bliss? I inquired.
Yes and no, Master Fuap replied, laughing. Meditation is the ability to be in a state of perfect mind. At the same time, it is the ability to do physical things in a harmonious way. It is a way to remain centered in a physical world that is out of balance. In Tantric Buddhism, we learn to meditate in two ways. First, we learn how to sit and focus on our chakras and stop our thoughts. Then, when the mind is empty, we can travel into the astral dimensions, the causal dimensions, or if we are very advanced in the practice of meditation, we can merge our minds with Nirvana itself. The second way we learn to meditate in Tantric Buddhism is by practicing mindfulness, he explained. Mindfulness is the practice of doing physical things perfectly, in a state of emptiness, in which we become consciously one with whatever physical or mental activity we are currently engaged in. You will find that, as you gain more control in your meditation, Master Fuap said, it will be much easier for you to practice mindfulness. You will also find, conversely, that the practice of mindfulness, of doing physical and mental things perfectly, will help you improve your daily meditation practice. In practical terms, what all this means, Master Fuap concluded, is that when you come to know that you are the board, your snowboarding will be perfect. But as long as you conceive of yourself as being separate from your snowboard, of riding on top of your board, or of directing your board, then this will not be true. When you seek to direct your board, he said, you are creating an unnecessary conceptual separation between yourself and your snowboard. The result will be that your actions are awkward and imperfect. But if you are the board, then you, the board, will direct yourself perfectly. You, the board, will know best what it is that you can and cannot do. Master Fuap shifted his position slightly on the snow. Most people make a mistake in life, they think their lives instead of living their lives. They believe that what they do, who they are, and how they do what they do, is something they must think about and choose. This way of approaching life, however, doesn't create perfect actions. As a matter of fact, this approach to life makes a person very egotistical. People who think their lives instead of living them directly, automatically assume they always know the best way of doing everything. But when we come to see that we are the thing that we do, Master Fuap continued, then we will be directed by the doing of that thing rather than egotistically attempting to imperfectly direct our own emotions.
I must have looked somewhat confused, because Master Fuap laughed good-naturedly and paused for a moment before resuming his explanation. When, for example, you are on your snowboard going down a mountain, you must decide how to direct your board. But whether you are aware of it or not, your board has an inherent knowledge of its own capabilities because it is made up of intelligent energy, just as you are. In Tantric Buddhism, he continued, we call the inherent knowledge that all animate and inanimate objects possess of themselves, their emptiness. It is the Buddhist belief that all things, experiences and people are inherently empty. That is simply a way of saying that all physical and non-physical things have another side, a side that is not visible to the senses or accessible to the reasoning mind, a side that can only be known and experienced intuitively by emptying one's own mind of thoughts, judgments and predispositions about life and how it works. Normally, Master Fuap explained, we only acquaint ourselves with the physical side of something. We come to know it as we choose. But to be honest with you, the physical side of a person, an animal, a plant, a thing or a place is minute in comparison to its non-physical side. Take me, for example, Master Fuap's voice resonated. You can see my physical body with your eyes. But my physical body is nothing in comparison to my non-physical body. My non-physical body is the part of myself that lives forever. It is ancient and complicated. It has lived through countless lives both in this and in other worlds. It knows things and can do things that you cannot possibly imagine. But if you look at me with your eyes, you will only see my physical side, and you may underestimate me. When I traveled back up the mountain on your snowboard a few minutes ago, you were very impressed. I did that with my non-physical body, with my subtle body, with my essential emptiness. Try always to remember that when you think about something, you separate yourself from it. But when you are empty, when your mind is tranquil and at peace with the universe, when it has become void of all thought, you become meditation. Then you consciously join with and become part of the power that is in everything around you. Everything knows what is best for itself, Master Fuap exclaimed. That is what the Sanskrit word Dharma means. Dharma means the best of all possible actions. I must have looked a little bit bewildered again, because he paused and asked me if I understood what he had just explained. I acknowledged my confusion, and then he was silent for several minutes. Then he spoke to me again, at a slower pace. Let me sum all of this up for you, he began. If we think and try to direct our lives with only our limited, rationalistic thoughts and our sense perceptions, then our actions and our activities will not be perfect. From a Buddhist perspective, it is incorrect to always assume that we know what is best. When we take the time to meditate and empty ourselves of thoughts, we immediately connect with the inherent emptiness of our actions and experiences. When we do this, our non-physical side merges with the non-physical side of that which we are experiencing. Once this has occurred, our actions and experiences will direct us. In other words, we will be guided by the inherent emptiness of the things we choose to interact with. One day, when you have learned to meditate well enough, you will come to see that in the state of emptiness, you are the action, not the performer of the action. Remember, always allow the action of an activity or an event to take precedence over your own point of view. This is the Tantric Buddhist way. Allow the emptiness inherent within actions and experiences to guide and shape your choices. Let your actions direct you, the actor, not the other way around. Before beginning an activity, Master Fuap instructed me, always first empty yourself of thoughts regarding what you are about to do. Then allow the inherent emptiness within what you are about to do to direct you. Instead of your ego directing you and making countless mistakes, allow yourself to be guided by the invisible principles of the universe within your actions. At that time there will be a perfect flow of energy in whatever you choose to do, and there will be a grace and power present in all of your movements. From a Tantric Buddhist perspective, this is perfect action. Master Fuap paused again for several minutes, giving me time to reflect on his explanation. Then he spoke again. Now you will go on your board down the mountain. But first you must make your mind still. Then allow the emptiness within your board to guide you. Then your ride down the mountain will be perfect action. Try it. I thanked Master Fuap for his discourse on emptiness and perfect action, and got onto my board. Perfect action, I thought to myself. Then I closed my eyes and tried to empty my mind of all thought. For some reason it was easy to do on the top of that Himalayan peak. Suddenly I was flooded with energy and I could feel the power, what Master Fuap had been calling the emptiness of the mountain, flowing through me. I had no thoughts, and yet I was completely aware. I opened my eyes and let go to my snowboard. It was me and I was it. I glided down the mountain, cutting back and forth through the granular powder without any conscious effort on my part. It was exactly as Master Fuap had described. My board and the mountain knew better than I did how to interact. I just let them take over and I enjoyed the ride down. It was the most perfect run I had ever made down a mountain. When I got to the bottom of the mountain, Master Fuap was waiting there for me with an "I told you so" smile on his face. Without talking, the two of us walked down the road together. Chapter 13, Tales of Powder. I spent the next several days by myself, snowboarding the Himalayas, practicing Master Fuap's emptiness method for perfecting my technique. It took some experimentation, but after a number of runs down the mountain I gradually began to get the sense that I was part of my snowboard, and that my snowboard was an extension of myself. My snowboarding rapidly improved. While I experienced some of the most wonderful moments of my life during those few days, I also noticed that at times I was incredibly lonely. Loneliness has never been a very precise feeling for me. Whenever I have felt lonely, I haven't felt that I missed anyone in particular. It has always been more of a vague feeling of uncertainty, a poignant and unfulfilled longing for an undefinable condition, other than that which I was experiencing at the time. I usually started to feel lonely each day about an hour or two before sunset. The feeling would always come upon me quite unexpectedly, and it didn't seem to be predicated upon or triggered by any particular phenomena. I may have been snowboarding happily for hours, when quite suddenly this feeling would sneak up on me. Often it was followed by or accompanied with additional feelings of frustration or despair. It always began in the same way. I would notice that I wasn't smiling anymore. Then, as it grew stronger, I would begin to feel somewhat disconnected from what was happening around me, or from what I was physically doing at the time. I usually attributed these feelings to physical exhaustion and high altitude, but I noticed that these emotions would always enter my mind at around the same time each day. When I was in the mountains, regardless of how much sleep I had gotten the night before, I had grown accustomed to feeling this way while snowboarding in the late afternoons in North America, but I noticed the feelings of loneliness that I experienced in the hour or two prior to sunset were even more pronounced when I was snowboarding the Himalayas. During the early part of the day I would very much enjoy being alone while I snowboarded, but in the late afternoon, usually around the time I was making my last run down a mountain, I would find myself feeling what I had come to refer to as cosmic loneliness. I had nicknamed the feeling cosmic loneliness because the emotions that I felt at these times had an almost spatial dimension to them. On the particular occasions when these feelings were most intense, I felt as if my mental perceptions extended beyond my body and this world to something infinitely more powerful, and that my personal concerns were overshadowed by what I could best describe as these otherworldly feelings. In the late afternoon in the Himalayas, the cloud cover would usually thicken and the sky would turn fantastic shades of pink, magenta, soft rose and lavender. At these moments of incredible physical beauty, I would often be standing on the top of a lone peak looking out over the snow-rimmed mountain horizon. Instead of being filled with exaltation by all of the beauty that lay before me, I was often filled with an unbearable feeling of emptiness and despair. The emptiness that I felt at these times was not the happy and ecstatic emptiness that Master Fuap had described to me. Often the sheer weight of those feelings would cause me to feel insignificant and lost. My gut reaction at times like these was to beat feet back to the hostel in Kathmandu, and find a pretty girl to laugh and spend some time with. I had the chance to ask Master Thwap about the incongruity of these feelings several days later. On that particular day, I had spent a happy morning snowboarding down yet another nameless Himalayan mountain. "Master Thwap," I blurted out, "what are you doing here?"
"I have come out here to visit you," he replied with a broad smile. "Since you are not content to be with a beautiful girl in one of the many scenic restaurants in Kathmandu today, as most young men your age would be, I found it necessary to come out here to the top of this particular mountain to engage you in conversation."
"Master Thwap," I inquired wistfully, "why is it that I often feel so lonely at this time of day?"
"I don't really have any reason to. Where does this feeling of loneliness come from? I know this might sound a little crazy, but somehow it doesn't quite feel like it is even my own feeling."
With a quick movement of his right hand, Master Thwap brushed the snow off an adjacent rock and sat down on it. I sat down next to him on my snowboard and made myself comfortable. He didn't say anything for several minutes, and I assumed he was considering my question. Suddenly he began to speak.
"There are many things to understand in life," he began. "And as you are beginning to find out, things are not always as they appear to be. Take different times of day, for example. It would seem that there shouldn't be any significant difference between different times of the day, don't you think? It would appear to be logical that all times of the day would be approximately the same.
The numbers that human beings have assigned to the hours of the day," Master Thwap continued to explain, "and the names they have given to the different times of day, such as morning, afternoon, sunset, evening, late night and sunrise, are, after all, only words. Since time itself appears to be relatively uniform, other than the names and numbers that have been applied to these different periods, there really shouldn't be any difference in the quality of time itself throughout the day."
"But Master Thwap," I interrupted, "people do different things at different times of the day. Most people get up in the morning, work or go to school during the afternoon, and sleep or party at night."
"Yes, that's true," he replied with a knowing smile. "But there are also other people who work at night and sleep during the day. So other than the activities people participate in at different times of the day or night, during the absence or presence of daylight, you would assume that the actual substance of time throughout the day would be uniform, wouldn't you?"
"Yes," I replied, "I would."
"Most people would agree with you," he said with a broad smile. "But the truth of the matter is that the quality of time actually changes throughout the day and night. Behind the visible world that you see in front of you each day, there are many invisible dimensions. A great number of these dimensions interconnect with our physical world. Some of these dimensions are place-specific," Master Thwap explained. "In other words, they only touch certain geographical areas. Other dimensions are more time-specific, in that they only interact with the physical dimension they touch during specific times of the day or night. During the late afternoon and early evening, starting from about 2 hours before sunset and ending at approximately 2 hours after sunset, there is a specific dimension that interconnects with our physical world. This particular dimension can best be visualized as a series of horizontally shaped geometric planes that extend from wherever you may happen to be at that time of day on out into infinity."
"But Master Thwap, how can that be? Since the time of the sunset is constantly changing locations on the Earth during a 24-hour period, does that mean that this dimension is constantly circling the globe? And why would it be connected to a specific time of day? Times of day are caused by the turning of the Earth in relation to the Sun. Why would that have anything to do with the shifting of a different dimension?"
Master Thwap smiled at me and laughed lightheartedly. I could tell that he was getting a kick out of my scientifically based Western logic. He paused for a few moments and closed his eyes. Then, without opening them, as if he was deeply concentrating on something, he began to speak again. "But whether it's Buddhism or science trying to explain the universe to us," he continued, "life, in its essence, ultimately remains magical and inexplicable."
"What do you mean when you say that life is magic, Master Thwap?"
"I mean that it cannot be completely explained or logically understood.
I know that it is popular in this era to believe there is a logical explanation for just about anything and everything that exists or happens. Since we Buddhists are reasonable people, we would also like to believe that everything that occurs in other dimensions, as well as in this dimension, can be explained through reason and logic. But the truth of the matter is, many aspects of life cannot be explained through logic or reason. The reasoning part of the mind simply doesn't have the capacity to understand many of the whys and hows of being and non-being. While the thinking and reasoning aspect of our minds may not be able to fully understand certain sides of life, Master Fuap continued, we do have another hidden part of our minds that can. In Buddhism we refer to this hidden part of our understanding as the intuitive or higher mind. The intuitive mind is non-physical, Master Fuap said precisely, as if he wanted me to pay particular attention to this concept. It is not part of the brain or any other cellular structure in the physical body. It is part of the causal body. As I mentioned to you before, he continued, the causal body is the part of a person that lives forever. It is what you would call the soul. It doesn't dissolve along with the physical and astral bodies at the time of physical death, at the end of an incarnation. The causal body is the most ancient and timeless part of a person. It has the capacity to know and do things that the physical mind and body cannot. Perhaps it will be easier for you to understand what I am talking about if I give you a concrete example, Master Fuap said a subtle smile. The most concrete thing in the universe is matter. As I am sure you are aware, learned scientists can explain quite a bit about matter. They know that it is formed of different elements, and that those elements are composed of specific atomic and subatomic structures. But while matter can be analyzed and its structures understood, scientists will never be able to understand why matter exists in the first place. It is the same in Buddhism. Buddhists who practice occultism, which is the scientific branch of Buddhism, seek to understand and explore the chemistries of time, space, dimensionality and awareness. While the study of occultism enables those who study it to attain an understanding about how dimensions work the way they do, what consciousness is made up of, how the different states of mind interconnect with each other, how to move between them, and many other things, it still cannot reveal to us why consciousness and dimensions exist in the first place. So then, what good is occultism, Master Fuap? I was beginning to feel both cold and frustrated. I was sitting on the frozen snow, and the late afternoon temperature was dropping rapidly. I felt a definite chill. Master Fuap's explanation wasn't clarifying anything about my feelings of cosmic loneliness. From my point of view, he was only further confusing the issue by discussing things that didn't even seem to be in the least bit relevant to my original question. Master Fuap must have understood my frustration. Be patient with me, he said. I first have to give you a little background information, to help create a perspective from which you should be able to understand my answer to your question. You, like most people your age, want to know everything all at once. I admire your enthusiasm. But to be honest with you, as I must be since I am a Buddhist monk, most of the important things that we learn about and experience in life can't be understood immediately. Some things take a lifetime, if not several lifetimes, to fully grasp. For example, let us consider how the movement of a non-physical dimension creates the feeling that you describe as cosmic loneliness. What you call loneliness, I call power, Master Fuap said sharply. Since I have studied Buddhist occultism to an extent, I can tell you that in the late afternoon, the dimensions of power become more manifest and accessible to us. Because you are psychic, you can feel those dimensions, he said, suddenly looking directly into my eyes, even though you may not be aware of the true nature of what you are feeling, and of the opportunities that those particular dimensions of power can afford you. I know about these things, he continued, because my own master, Fuas Shastradup, explained them to me, and also because I have validated the things that he taught me with my own research and life experiences. You are innately psychic because you have meditated and practiced yoga in many of your past lives, Master Fuap stated matter-of-factly. You were born this way into this life because of your past life development. But since you grew up in a non-Buddhist culture, there was no one to explain these things to you when you were a child, or to show you how to develop and understand your innate psychic talents, as you matured from childhood into adolescence and young adulthood. Since you are more psychic than most other people, you can feel things that they cannot. You can feel when the dimensions shift at different times of the day. But because you do not understand what you are feeling, and how to work with and gain power and higher awareness from those feelings, you are somewhat confused and alienated by them. The feeling you describe as cosmic loneliness, Master Fuap continued patiently, is your emotional reaction to the intensity of the dimensions of power that are present in the late afternoon. These particular dimensions of power are often perceived as being spatially immense. It feels as if they go on forever and ever, and in a way they do. Your instinctive reaction to the perception of that immensity is to feel dwarfed by it. Since you have not made friends with that immensity, as I have, and since you have not understood its beneficial side, you tend to react to these dimensions of power by feeling small, insignificant, overwhelmed and alienated. It is as if you are confronting the totality and immensity of the universe. He continued. You feel as if that immensity out there is about to crush you and destroy your identity. Your reaction is to run for cover and seek something familiar, like a familiar location and the company of others you like or trust, to shut out those overwhelming feelings. Once you have managed to do that, you feel safe. You can forget about that immensity out there and feel secure in your identity, and with familiar circumstances again. But what you fail to see and understand, Master Fuap said very softly, is the incredible beauty and the majestic power that these particular dimensional planes can make available to you in the late afternoons and early evenings. Someday, when you come to see and understand these things, you will be able to access the power and beauty of those dimensions and bring them into your own life. How can I come to see this, Master Fuap? Sometimes we react to things that we don't understand with fear, misunderstanding and confusion. The alternative to this type of reaction is to cultivate a healthy curiosity toward things, situations and feelings that we don't understand, and to react to them with curiosity instead of with fear. There are invisible powers and forces behind everything in life, Master Fuap suddenly said in a loud voice. Usually we react to these powers and forces with disbelief, prejudice and violence. Or we can choose to have a more enlightened view toward things that we don't immediately understand. It is good to have a healthy curiosity about the unknown that is not based on fear, Master Fuap said with a broad smile, just as it is equally important not to have an irrational need to believe in things that may not be true, simply because we feel the need to rationalize the things in life that we don't understand. It is the tantric Buddhist belief that the visible universe is a kind of revolving doorway that can take us back and forth between the invisible dimensions, he continued. Human beings usually train their young to run away from things that they don't understand. It is an old bad habit. They teach their children to hide from, rationalize and be unduly afraid of death, the immensity of life and the experiences of the spirit. When human beings live this way, they shut out both the high and low frequencies in their lives. This leaves them with the boring mid-range experiences in daily living that they perceive to be safe. In this way, the world of human experiences is reduced to a world of feeding, toiling for a living, reproducing and continuously fending off the unknown. But some of us are born with a different karma, he happily exclaimed. We cannot be content to experience only the mundane aspects of life. We need to feel both the high and low range frequencies of existence, because all of the frequencies of existence that we see in the external world correspond to different frequencies within ourselves. Everything that you see around you exists somewhere inside your mind. Your mind contains all of the frequencies of life in seed form. We experience feelings of wellness and happiness when we allow ourselves to freely and intelligently experience all of the higher frequencies of life. We become unhappy, depressed, self-destructive and needlessly violent toward ourselves and others when we experience too many of the low-range vibrations of life. Life is a delicate balance between the magical forces of creation and the magical forces of destruction, Master Thwarp continued. The primary reason that most human beings are so unhappy is that they cut themselves off from the more complex and beautiful tonal ranges of existence.